boss.
The siren's gone, like the tiger of old. The storm and the bull will be the tiger.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And it really does feel like this season, I don't know, I'm sure all seasons seem much less uneventful in retrospect, but yeah, I could use this season to be a little less exciting.
As I said today on Twitter, it does. The Richmond team this season does feel a bit like a professional wrestling storyline, a sort of Dusty Rhodes style, or Daniel Bryan when he was a good guy. That every week, the sort of the dastardly heel overseer of the league finds different challenges and different ways to make it impossible for us to win, and yet somehow we keep triumphing against all odds. And then next week something even worse has to happen to give you the suspension of disbelief that we're not going to win. Now, Nick, I'm glad for anyone who's listening to this podcast, because over the last 2 weeks, also we always hedge what we say and qualify it, our predictions have been disastrously wrong.
which is a shame, because look, sometimes we're not bad at predictions, and look, if you do anything long enough, you'll be proven both right and wrong. But yeah, we're not on a roll.
And if you had told me that at half time the score was going to be really close, and both Nank and Ross were going to be out for the game, I would have just said no chance.
Yeah.
You know, you lose two of your key running midfielders, young team already, playing in Western Australia, on a reasonably warm day, the chances of us, just them running over the top of them, us were just, it just looked so likely. And then they came out and pulled this incredibly brave and impressive win, which also was tactically really interesting, which we'll talk about in a moment. But, look, it's hard not to have recency bias. And as you say, every season's more interesting. But I did look through the 2018 season, and we had one. This does seem the most meritorious victory since the grand final.
Well, or even since the last time we said that after the Port Adelaide win.
Yeah, but we didn't have injuries halfway through the game against Port Adelaide. And, key injuries. I think they're equivalent opposition, but it just to win with all that, like, at the end of the third quarter, it was almost unbearable watching it, because, you know, we had a 4/5 goal win. But, you know, Broad was already badly cramping up at the end of the third. I mean, we were so out of legs. We had to run so far that day because our rotations were down. It was a phenomenal victory.
So, if you cast your mind back to last year's final win against Hawthorn, at the very end of the game when we take off our most indispensable players, and it's normally some form of Rance, Cochin, Dusty, Nank, at the time we debated about Jack. And yeah, it's like we've been cursed.
Yeah, absolutely. I wonder if it turns out that someone's been secretly worshipping Baal, because it does feel like we've had a biblical plague of injuries upon us.
And so if for the second half of that game, if you put together a team of current Richmond players who weren't on the field to play against the 20 Richmond players who were on the field, it's actually quite a competitive match.
That's what I felt like. It felt almost like an intra-club game where you split the club in half.
And yet we won, and we won pretty handily. It was really good fun.
Look, I want to really pay credit to the game plan here. So this year and last, we almost always trail the opposition in disposals. And this year it's been particularly pronounced, probably because we're not as good. We have been averaging, even after this week, minus 50 disposals, relative 50 less disposals than our opposition. Now, this week we had 50 disposals more, so that's 100 disposable turnaround, which is a huge difference. And it was noticeable watching it that we used less of the manic knock-on handballs, although it was there sometime, and we used a lot more ball control offense. And then suddenly, you know, we waxed a lot more across the back line to keep the ball out of Fremantle's hands. And then suddenly you see, you know, Dylan Grimes, a very experienced player, suddenly having career high in disposals. Connor Menadue having a career high. Hooley having above 30. This is not a coincidence. We had deliberately switched our game plan knowing that we need to do something different.
It was a little bit like Nirvana. It was slow, slow, quick.
Yeah, and look.
Because when it was quick, it was as exciting as they ever are, and it was great.
It was, and you know that we did have a few passengers of goat running football, but you know, and actually this is full credit to Bolton. I mean, he was BOG by any reasonable measure and was brilliant, but him kicking a couple of those snap goals, like, it really helped us tactically for them to be chasing us. It would have been much harder for us to win if they were playing ball control and they were protecting the lead. It really helped us that we could sort of sit back and wax and control. And part of the reason we got there is because, you know, Bolton made a few half chances, full chances, and so did Bolter, and Lynch kicked a nice goal in the first, actually a snap
goal. Castagna had the goal of the week.
Yeah, exactly. Like, all this stuff really mattered. So, you know, at the end, the inside 50s were almost even. And, you know, that taking a couple of those half chances really did set it up. But, you know, that's how you're going to win a game against a reasonably good team in Western Australia when you're carrying injuries. You're going to need a few things to go right for you, and going to need to have a really good game plan. And hats off to the coaching staff. We didn't go with plan A. We had a game plan, and it worked to a T.
Yep. And, yeah, it was a really impressive effort of in-game coaching to make the adjustments. And we've talked before about what it means when you lose players. Like, we've lost an inside midfielder from the rotation. We've lost... So Bolter's effectively going into Nank's spot, so he can't do any of the other... stuff around the grounds. Like, there's just a flow-on effect. We didn't have anyone other than the injured players who had less than 80% game time, whereas you compare, Fremantle had about half the team with less than 80% game time. Like, everyone just has to work that much harder. But actually, there were two other things I took away from the game. Firstly was how familiar the new stadium at Perth was. Like, you know, I'd seen West Coast and Freo played there, but actually seeing Richmond on the oval, it just struck me how MCG-like it felt.
Mm. Fair enough.
Like, the dimension, I mean, the size of the stadium, but also the dimensions. It's Subiaco was really noticeably long and thin and could get very congested in the middle of the ground, but, you know, the new stadium, it's a lot more like the MCG in size, and I thought we made Freo look a bit slow and stodgy at both ends of the ground, and they couldn't cope. They'd look dangerous when they had their enormous key forwards and their 206-centimetre ruckman plucking marks. But yeah, when we had the ball on the ground, we were a much more fluent and connected team.
Fair enough. And maybe the similarity to the MCG partly helped West Coast in the grand final last year.
Could be. The other thing was just, well, we've already mentioned a couple of names, but how many guys potentially had their best game for the club? Like, how many would you say had their best game for the club?
Bolton, obviously.
Yep.
Bolter, yes. 10 contested possessions.
And for the, we said last week, the the league leader in clangers per possession. Only one clanger this week.
Fair point. So I guess the Menidieu is the other potential case.
Yep.
Definitely high in.
Four more possessions than he'd ever had.
And I was just checking sort of past history, like that was his most meters gained. He's had an 8-score involvement game, but that's only 3 more than he had. He has had a 9 contested possession game last year, and actually that really close Geelong game where we just beat them at the MCG, so that was credible. But yeah, he's been pretty good.
I thought he was really composed, both as a half forward and as a half back. So it was a nice four-quarter effort, and more so, like he's, you know, we saw on grand final day, he's really quick, and yet he's never been able to string it together. But yeah, I thought this was a genuine four-quarter performance. And look, Garthwaite's had a decent game of senior football before, but again, I thought this was perhaps his most four-quarter effort, and as I tweeted out, that is by a not small amount the farthest any Richmond player has run in a game this year. Like he just worked really hard, and surprise, surprise, with the benefit of an extra month's football rather than coming in underdone against the Giants, you know, by necessity, you know, and not matching up against Jeremy Cameron, he doesn't look nearly as slow. He's positioning well, he's covering ground, he's using go-go gadget arms and spoiling everything.
Yeah, that was interesting, the reaction to that tweet, for those who didn't see it, that Garthwaite ran about 16.7 Ks, I think. And just for the benchmark, that normally our top runners is usually Ellis or Lambert, somewhere in the 15s. Ellis was our second best this week, I think, with somewhere in the 15s again. So that's normal. So it's not unheard, because we did shuffle around the back line, and you know, often Broad is one of our biggest runners. So it's not unusual for that people in that role to get a lot of miles on their legs.
Cover a lot of ground, yeah.
But it was a super popular tweet, and I've got a theory about Garthwaite.
Did you see who one of the people who liked it was?
Yes, I saw that Richo liked it. I've got a theory about Garthwaite, and this is based on my own personal reaction to him. He's really likable.
Yeah.
Like, he's sort of a throwback to an old Richmond, you know, to sort of the Shane Tuck Richmond trier.
Oh, no. He is Paul Bullis.
I thought that too, but he was more divisive amongst Richmond fans.
Yeah, but give Garthwaite time.
Fair enough. He's definitely... I want to talk
a bit about... Big key defender, him. Awkward kicking motion... I really liked Paul Bullis.
A couple of things though, like he gets that lunging, those long arms just you know, get in there and create space. He's very game, his second efforts are good. And about his kicking motion, you know, we've said it before that you know
less awkward than it was, which is good.
Someone, like I've said before,
it was really awkward, and it was slow and awkward when he was drafted. Somewhat less slow and less awkward, but still not ideal now.
It's not ideal, but, you know, it still feels like he can get a beer when he starts to, during the ball drop. But now that I've seen a bigger sample size of kicking him both in the reserves and the seniors, the ball goes in the right direction. And, you know, guess what? Dave Asprey's not a great kick. There's a reason why some people on the internet call him down the line Dave, because... You know, unless he has a wide open target, that's what he does.
Got to play to your strengths and weaknesses.
Exactly. And Dave Asprey is a perfectly capable AFL key defender. Now, I'm not sure Garthwaite will get to 200 games, but, you know, I can see him being a very capable player. And I don't have I'm not nervous when he kicks. I haven't seen him yet under heavy pressure, but when he kicks with a bit of space, he gets it right. The ball spins convincingly. It goes to the right spot. It's got some penetration. Yeah, I'm right now. I'm big on Team Garthwaite.
Look, we are. It's impossible to, you know, even at round one to imagine this version of the this version of the team, where we are lamenting Jack Ross's absence from the team. I was genuinely surprised when Sydney Stack made a couple of mistakes as first year players do. Like, we've almost in barely a month, our standards for him have become impossibly high, and he still kicked an awesome goal.
So, yeah, look, I mean, I was actually, I was sort of struck also. Well, his goal was amazing, but, you know, it's sort of, you know, with him, Higo, with a lot of these young guys, we've, and obviously Bolton off the charts, we've got a nice cadre of players who are almost always perfect below their knees.
Dan Rioli as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Just, you know, out of sight. I really like how good these guys are just instinctively when the ball's on the ground, and Stack just continues to impress with that.
Yeah. Look, he uncharacteristically a couple of bad turnovers, but it's still
actually he has made a few. Like he has made a few.
Like, yeah. But there were, he's very composed in traffic, and I think he's just going to get better at that, because that was a real strength of his in juniors. And I wonder if not that long from now the Reece Conker role, where he's playing off halfback but taking some turns in the middle, might be feasible, and also playing in that position in a way that brings us joy that Reece Conker never did, frankly.
Yeah. Also, since you brought it up, now that Ross is injured, I do have to confess that I would love to have Reece playing. You know, he just noticing that he does provide a big body around the contest. His kicking still slows down the play. Like, he wasn't a highly ranked player for the Dockers on the weekend, but. He is, and I wouldn't want him on a 4-year contract, but he is competent.
Yeah. We certainly miss him to a certain extent, but
we miss him right now with Conker and Ross injured. So just on the things you weren't expected, Liam Baker's in the top 50 in the AFL in score involvements.
I wasn't expecting that. Camden McIntosh regularly monstering dudes with contested marks is also a new feature.
Oh, yes. He was very dominant.
Unexpected. He's an okay mark against other wingmen, but we're not quite used to him bullying dudes at that much.
No, absolutely not. He liked coming home.
Yeah, I actually thought that was really nice. And flying Alex Rance over as well. They did all right by the Western Australian contingent.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's been extremely happy hunting ground for our recruiters.
Almost universally got good value out of the picks, so, yeah, that was nice.
I want to make a bit more love to Shire's Bolton's game.
Yeah, it was a level above, right? If you thought, perhaps the difference between him and his opportunities and Brandon Matera and how wasteful he was with a series of half chances. Yeah, it was a really nice game.
It was. And, he led the team in tackles as well. And Dimmer said it afterwards, he's always had the offensive ability, but he needs to add the defensive side. You know, he talked about his crunching tackles. And it's there to see, you know, he's just an amazing game all round. And he set up others for their goals as well.
Yep, and perhaps should have had another one that Baker slammed into the post.
And could have won the Rising Star this week.
Oh, so they announced it?
Yes, they have.
Yeah. So who was it?
It was Geelong bloke.
Oh, Constable. Dang.
What's his face? Anyway, I keep going. I'll look it up for you.
Anyway, Tom Lynch. Six contested marks is really good. Talk about being wrong about things. How long ago were we lauding his goal kicking?
Yeah, I did feel it was Graham Myers, by the way.
Yeah.
Graham Myers.
The dreadlocked small forward.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yes. Look, I did feel for you, Nick. There is a bit of a mini Aaron Edwards effect going on. His once reliable goal kicking has gone a bit to crap. And the thing is, his misses weren't even that close. Mm-hmm. A couple of them. Like, I hit the post once, but it was a very gettable shot. It's frustrating. But on the other hand, contesting, I think it was 6 contested marks.
He was clunking a lot. And he was really active in the play. I thought he had a couple of really nice tap-ons. He was making a lot of contests. He wasn't getting outmarked. It was a really good game.
Sorry, I must admit, the footy classified hot take that is he finally starting to justify his contract made me want to drive a stake through my eye, because it wasn't even his best game for the year.
No, look, it was a bad week for hot takes. The Richmond has no leadership article from Mick Malthouse, or whoever writes the article for him, was a particular low point as well, I thought.
Yeah. Malthouse has always had, he's written a lot of these next man up articles that, you know, you can always just play through injuries, and it's a sign of team culture. Mm. It's funny how premiership teams tend to win with very short injury lists.
Yeah, and I do think that as much of a joy, and it has been an unmitigated joy, how well the young players have played this season, we would be getting more leadership out of Cochin, Rance and Riewoldt than we would out of Baker, Ross, and Stack. Like, that's... I don't feel like it's controversial to make that statement.
No. And, by the way, a lot of what people define as leadership is really good players playing well.
Mm.
Have you noticed how it's never the hacks who get made captain? It's always one of the top four players in the team.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know that he's a top four player, but Brandon Ellis has really come a long way this season in terms of, you know, outside best 22 in round one to really being one of our more consistent players.
Yeah, I mean, he's utterly essential in a team full of young players who can't necessarily run out games, because he always does run out games and he covers spots. He made a horrendous tackle and missed tackle in the first quarter, but then he made it back at the end of the third, absolutely destroyed a guy. So,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, he did. Look, I thought he tackled well. And he's kicking his goals, which just, it forgives him multitudes of sins.
It does make a huge difference, doesn't it? Mm. When you're adding the difference between net contribution to net net negative, it does help. And I think we'd be in a lot of trouble without him at the moment.
What did you, like, we mentioned about Noah Bolter, but yeah, it was a, like, he's such a unique player. Like, just so extremely athletically gifted. I really like his follow-up play sometimes. Like, just that broken play where he can use his athleticism really suits him. Leading up the football doesn't suit him at all. Like, yeah. And, he's genuinely important
for us. We were part of an offline debate today about who of him or Richo was a better athlete.
I feel like your opinion on this is extremely controversial.
It is, but before we get to that, I mean, the thing was that no one was disputing the fact he's the best athlete since Richo.
I suggest, look, the best, just on paper, David Gordis is the best athlete we've ever had at the club. Like, just the fastest.
That's fair. Yeah.
Fastest, biggest leap. It just never in any way translated to the football field. Of the current group, by AFL Draft Camp testing, it would either be Dan Rioli or, would you believe, Ben Miller, who tested, like, top five for both the 20-metre sprint and the agility at 196 centimetres and nearly 100 kilos, which is freakish. Noah Bolter didn't test in the top 10 of his draft camp year, which makes no sense at all, because he's an extremely explosive athlete.
He is. I was saying, I'm a big NFL fan. I follow the draft closely, and someone like Bolter, who looks the part, has okay junior production, but not amazing, but has flash greatness. And, you know, let's assume that he has good, you know, elite athleticism. They don't go in the second round. They go yeah, halfway through the first at the latest. Like,
yeah, when a coach thinks, yeah, I'm good enough to take this ball of clay and make something of it.
He is actually very similar to the guy the Packers drafted in number 12 in the NFL draft this year. I'm getting deep dive nerd there, but the point is, he's a bloody steal.
Well, and I think in the circumstances where we had three top 25 picks and Patrick Naish coming in, you take, look, he's at the complete opposite end of the spectrum to Jack Higgins. You get a developing ruckman in the middle. You get an outside running player who's demanding to be picked in the seniors with his performance in the VFL. Like, it's a really nice package. But because you've got those other picks, you can take the chance on a guy who, you know, even when he's exciting, you still don't know exactly what he's going to become.
Yeah, because the problem with him is you probably should take him, but he might also get you fired if he's your only pick.
Yeah. Yeah, and if the supporters' hopes and dreams were all depending on him, yeah, that could be quite uncomfortable.
Yeah, he came to the right club.
Hmm. Anyone else you wanted to mention?
Return to form for Shedder. Prestia continued.
Keep chugging on. Yep.
Yep. Also, plenty of score involvements, which I'm a big fan of as an indicator of actually doing useful things and not just going sideways. Baker continues to be very strong. Rate extremely highly. Becomes an important player. Dusty did a few nice defensive things. Also, a few times didn't bother to chase at all, which led to goals.
I thought Dusty was one. Dusty was one guy who was who had to spend more time on the ball than usual, and I thought he showed signs of conking out.
I have a Dusty theory, Nick.
Ooh, okay.
So I liked his game.
Mm. The goal was extremely tidy work.
And vintage Dusty too. Mm. But I think, so he was solid, and he didn't rate outstandingly, but he was an important contributor. I think he's playing a bit more within himself, which is good for the team. There was a few things he did that weren't, so Dusty in his 2017 best, he got the ball, he deliberately broke a tackle to create the overlap. And now more in, he was taking the forced option more now and playing more like a normal human being. I use an example. If you actually look at the highlights of the game on the AFL website, there's a clever tap that Dusty did.
That was a lovely bit of play.
I think that in 2017, Dusty would have grabbed that ball first and then gone around the player and then looked for his options. I just think he's accepted that for whatever reason he's not doing the things he was doing in 2017, and he played a human being's game. And guess what? He's still a really, really talented footballer with an amazing disposal skill and sense of ground awareness. So I don't find that game promising in the sense that 2017 is magically coming back, but I do find it promising in that I think it was a good team game.
Mm. Yeah, he worked well. And all the midfielders had to carry more of a load. I can't remember Camden McIntosh taking centre bounces before. We had a bit of Liam Baker. It was the full box and dice.
Yes, I was amused when Dermy got super excited. The Broad won a tap, and then straight away Fremantle scored a goal.
Yeah. One last thing, not a player, but a team. I thought we did a really good job of stopping them from switching the ball. I thought they had a lot of fairly slow, predictable down the line play, which we were gobbling up, without too much trouble.
Yeah, good observation. And I'll just say this, and please, if you're a Fremantle fan, hate listening, turn off now. after the Lockie Neal trade, my Fremantle sources tell me that a lot of the senior management in the club wanted to spend the capital on draft picks, young players, and that Ross Lyon and maybe some others overrode them and said we're in win now mode, and went after Hogan And this is why you never let your coaches, particularly ones at the end of their contract, make your personnel decisions.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I actually felt a bit sorry for Adam Gerrard. You know, he's top five midfielder, but having to play on the back pocket against the chaos machine, Jason Castagna. Yeah, when he's not the quickest dude, that was pretty tricky.
Yeah, you'd have to, when Castagna kicks that goal of the week on you, you know your luck's probably not in.
Yep. So look, it was quite a big weekend for Richmond all round. The wheelchair VFL team won. The VFL women's team beat the Darabin Falcons, although sadly not with a lot of the gun signings in the team yet. And the VFL team went down to and had a nice win against Frankston.
Yeah, and I know Frankston bombed the ladder, but geez, you know, they really smacked them up. And, you know, this team is so denuded of its depth.
Oh, yeah.
And yet still keeps winning. It's super impressive.
Yeah, so I mentioned Patrick Naish. He's really on a tear. And I think it's a shame that he's one of the few people who hasn't had an injury at his position.
You know, you look at Menadue and Oleg's development, and you know, Menadue's sort of just finally looking big enough to play AFL properly. You know, there's a case to be made that it's tough to play in the back line when you're still slightly weak, and you're not strong yet, because you know, Stack's obviously young, but he's very naturally strong. You know, you can see why they're protective of him and not rushing him into the seniors.
Yeah, but also 29 disposals and 4 goals, several of which were extremely well taken. He was the first player that Dimmer mentioned of the team depth. Like, yeah.
Don't get me wrong, I'm just saying why, you know, understand why he wasn't in the team last week.
I understand it as well, but yeah, I also like that he's just trying to beat down the door. Mabwella came back, played well. Fraser Turner, I mentioned before, I like his work. He's a big endurance runner as well. He's winning a fair bit of football. Jake Arts, Jacob Townsend, the Egg, Eglamose Smith. Riley Collier-Dawkins had more kicks than handballs, which for him is quite a thing. And, you know, he was emergency for the seniors.
Dimmer's quote about him is he'd love to get him in.
Mm.
And, you know, maybe it makes sense to bring him in as a spot centre square player.
Yeah, I think in terms of, well, if you're looking for guys who can take the centre bounces, I'm not sure who the alternative is.
Well, yeah, so, I mean, you know, frankly, even now, although Tanner gets you more flexibility, you'd rather have RD than Tanner in the centre square, and I don't know what your other choice is, should you say.
No. Callum Coleman-Jones took a big hanger, which I enjoyed, and had 16 disposals. In a very nice game. And we had a guy, Lockie Street, who I noticed because he's 191 centimetres. He was making his debut. He's from Frankston, but not from the VFL team. He was playing for a local team last year. And he's had 18 disposals and a goal on his debut. So, yeah, nice work.
Yeah, but you haven't mentioned Soldo, who by some was best on ground.
Yeah, true. Played well.
14 disposals, 38 hit-outs. I'm actually excited to see how he's progressed.
Hmm. 5 tackles, yeah.
I presume we're agreed that he should come in?
Oh, yeah. I like how Callum Coleman-Jones is tracking, but, yeah, he's just not. He's 3 to 4 kilos, maybe 5 kilos short of where he needs to be, whereas Ivan Soldo is a really big lump of a human being playing against. And Ben McAvoy, you're not worrying about the mobility so much, although he's got good endurance. But he's a big, strong boy and good in the air. So, yeah, Soldo is the obvious choice.
Only 22 as well. You know, this is why we had him on the list. It's his time to shine. And you know what? I know we've had these conversations about who do you most want to not get injured on the Richmond team, and Nank is always very high on that list. But somehow I've now become irrationally optimistic that we can cover any injuries. So, I'm now excited about seeing Soldo. And, you know, why we will lose something around the ground, and I absolutely love Nank, I suspect Soldo is a better pure ruckman than Nank is.
Yeah, I mean, he's just not... And Soldo is a physical dude, but he's just not going to separate a man's soul from his body in the way that Nank does.
No, I mean, you know, there is no doubt that any Richmond supporters' affection for Nank, but, you know, all I'm saying is that there is a chance that there might be one or two things that actually get better.
Yes, it's feasible. And look, we are so far down the rabbit hole of, guys just stepping in and stepping up that you just think, oh, well, you know, it really is next man up.
Yep. Amazingly, the cliche actually seems to be working.
Hawthorn. They're kind of in not that dissimilar a position to us. They've won 4 games instead of 5, slightly better percentage. A few injuries. They're a noticeably older team. And that weird thing there. They've been Peter Pan. They've refused to rebuild at all. They literally don't have a single first round draft pick on their list from this decade. They've traded them all, and they've often traded them really well. And they've even traded for guys like Tom Scully, who's didn't play at all last year and is somehow back covering quite a lot of turf, if not playing hugely well. But yeah, they're a dangerous team. We're 8.5-point favourites last time I checked. But Jager O'Meara, you know, when he's right, is a fantastic player. And they've still got the DNA of some of the Premiership team. So yeah, it's not easy.
Yeah, you have to assume a team's pretty well coached when against a top 4 contender, they got a 30-year-old, almost about to turn 31, Ricky Henderson, had the best game of his career.
Yeah.
That's pretty good coaching.
That's a pretty good effort, yeah. And yeah, getting guys like James Cousins or Warple, you know, neither of whom were in any way high draft picks, they've come in and been really solid for them. James Frawley's a good key back. Puopolo forward.
Sicily, the advanced rankings love.
They got a big raw youngster, Mitchell Lewis, who's shown a bit on the weekend. They played 2 ruckmen successfully. Jonathan Segler was both backup ruck, but also kicked a couple of goals and was really active, so yeah, that's and again, we definitely have to play the big specialist ruckman.
Yeah, you know, but on the other side, and again, there's been a lot of turnover change, but I think our finals victory was against them was peak 2018 Richmond, where we destroyed them. They just had no answer for our chaos balls. Our small forwards just tore them apart.
No, they've got at least half a dozen changes from that team, and they've strangled a pretty good team on the weekend at the MCG. Even if for some reason they didn't let any of the spectators attend.
Yeah, that was deeply impressive bandwagoning to imagine 14,000 for your home game at the MCG. I could only imagine what would happen. If the apocalypse was announced the day before, Richmond would get 20,000 to a home game at the MCG.
So I've identified there's a definite pattern and a problem with us when we get really excited about these unexpected wins. We do the show early in the week, and we just haven't had time for the panic to set in, so we're prone to grotesque overconfidence.
Yeah, well, I mean, my confidence in being able to predict games is completely shot. I mean, I'm tempted just to go with the opposite of what I want to happen, just for karmic reasons. But I am confident. We've just had the wood on them.
We have. But Clarkson, despite, I think, at times, him getting a very favourable run in the media, he's also a really good coach, and we are well down on personnel, and our margin for, if we're not super switched on, we can't get away with it the way we have at other times, so... Yeah.
Yeah, and we are eventually it's going to, well, it does catch up with us.
Mm.
It caught up with us against the Bulldogs. By the way, hats off to Sammy Lloyd, who, speaking of late game best career, had his best career game in the AFL rankings last week.
Yeah, awesome.
But yeah, caught up to us against the Bulldogs. The inherent variableness of young players is evident to all to see. You know, Bolton almost semi-single-handedly won us the game this week, you know. Look, in fairness, he's been good every game he's played this year, but he may have an off week. You just never know. But, I mean, it's really exciting and interesting watching us at the moment. Like, this is fun. This is way more fun game to game than winning's good, but, you know, it did sort of get boring winning exactly the same way in 2018.
Yeah, look, I mean, I'd still rather finish 18-4, but it's definitely, it's a lot of fun, and I really don't know. I'm not going to make a prediction. I just hope we can keep this same spirit, that we keep bringing guys in and they keep stepping up, and yeah.
This game is like the dream season for any cranky internet fan who's always complaining we should play the young kids more. Well,
isn't that us?
Yeah, I don't know. I went a bit... In the Anthony Miles era, I went a bit conservative. It's a bit different when you're in the championship window. But, we're certainly getting... it's pretty hard to complain about the amount of young player action we're getting at the moment.
Yep. I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
For the strong and the bold who have been taunted and traumatised for over 37 years, this one is for you. Richmond, yes, Richmond, our premiers, 5:13 p.m. on Saturday, September 30, 2017, is officially Tiger Time.
We never reconcile.
It's just a celebration of all good things Richmond Lightning.
Come from nowhere.
Alex Rance.
Never not going to go, was he? Was he?
Pick up from Cotchin. Left off snap.
Something fantastic, and we just got to keep riding away.
D.
Martin, three votes.